and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And happy Tuesday, John. Tuesday. Happy Tuesday. can I get a quick Braves update?
Braves update. It is top of the third. Two balls, one strike. The Braves are down 2-0. Tampa is already kicking our ass.
All right, cool. Thank you. Braves update done.
Yay.
I'm going to keep that preamble short because this is going to be our beefiest minute of the week. And we got a lot of shit to talk about with Jessica and the Water of Life and
Transmutation and Bene Gesserit.
So much stuff.
Prana Bindu magic. So let's just get into it.
We are, of course, talking about minutes 26 through 27 of Dune Part 2. And when we left off yesterday, Jessica was writhing on the ground after having ingested the Water of Life. And we start this minute with Jessica writhing on the ground.
After ingesting the Water of Life.
Yes. Yes. And her heartbeat is racing. We can hear it on screen or hear it in the audio. We can't see it necessarily on screen, but we can hear it. And she is going through it.
She's rolled from her side onto her back.
Yes.
Look at that. And I don't know if you noticed this, but I have a question.
Okay.
So, as is expected, when you take a poison, blood is coming out of her nose.
Okay, no, I had the same point.
Why is the blood coming out of her nose dried?
Yes. Also, if you rewind 2 seconds, the blood wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, we're not led to
hit her nose on the way down, and then just blood immediately dried. Like Arrakis is hot, but probably not that hot where it just immediately evaporates all the water.
I hate to say this, I think this is a continuity error.
I do believe it is. And okay. Maybe. So we talked about how it was very Exorcist inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we had some, you know, like spurting blood moments and they were like, how about no?
Yeah. I mean,
on the editing table, but that part still was there. And like, maybe they just missed it when they were, you know, cleaning up the footage or whatever.
Something like that. But I did note that as well.
Yep.
She had blood on her face, at her nose, dried blood.
Dried blood coming out of her right nostril.
Yep. When she rolled over, but when she went down, presumably seconds before this, there was no blood on her face at all.
I'm glad you and I both noticed.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But that is not an egregious enough error to take me out of the minute because this is...
Well, also in the shot, the focus is really more on her eyes because we see her eyes pretty much become lifeless at this point.
Yeah, she's just like staring blankly into the ceiling. Also, I was more concerned about the drip of snot on her cheek at this point than the dried blood. That was a little bit grosser to me.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Whatever.
We'll move past it.
But we cut back inside her body.
Yes, we get the internal POV.
Yeah, internal POV of the Water of Life consuming... Saint Alia of the Knife.
That is true. We said it yesterday, but I like this representation of the poison spreading.
Yeah.
Like, it is a really artistic interpretation of poison.
It's an artistic interpretation, but it works.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it is very, first of all, very visually pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but we talked about yesterday how, like, seems very easy to replicate in a practical sense. So I'm curious then if this is a practical embryo.
You think they got a real embryo?
No. But like you can fucking whip it up with some resin or whatever, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm going to say no to that.
You think it's CG?
I think this is CG. Yeah, just given the motion that the fetus shows and the eyes dilating and stuff. Well, all stuff we'll talk about here in a second.
Well, so that part definitely, but also now that I'm thinking about it, minute 3, I think it was when we saw inside Jessica's womb, as Paul was talking to his unborn sister, you can see like the blood moving through as the pulses going. So like,
safe to say this is CG.
Oh, damn. I was really hoping at least the water effects were practical.
Who was cast as Embryo in Dune Part 2?
IMDb says nothing.
All right, well.
Sorry.
What a heck of a first credit that would be for that actor's life.
It's actually Anya Taylor-Joy's very first acting credit.
So we get more wailing coming from an off-screen wailer. We have some
sinister... Yar. Just replace it with a bunch of yars.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking of the Wailers on the Moon song from, like, I think it's the first episode of Futurama, or maybe second.
Yeah.
Where they go to Lunar Park. I think it's second.
It's early season one.
I think it's second episode. Yeah. We're Wailers on the Moon. We carry our harpoons, but there ain't no whales, so we tell tall tales and sing our whaling tune. So yes, an off-screen whaler is doing their thing.
Call me Ishmael.
The captions, and I love when the captions do shit like this. It's got just brackets and it says strained grunting.
So in fairness, those are captions for hearing impaired.
Yeah, no, so. I know. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's factually correct.
It is funny.
But I love it when they give those like descriptions of the sounds. That's exactly how you
noise would... clicking.
Yeah.
As we talk about occasionally, like I played Destiny a lot. One of there's in that game, there's one where it's insect like chattering.
So while Jessica is going through this ordeal, Romalo is continuing to have the time of her life.
At least as far as we've known.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. She genuinely looks excited that this is happening. And she smiles and tilts her head back. And it almost looked like a moment of ecstasy for her.
So, I've read, not a doctor, not a... But I've read that there's like in certain cases as people are passing, just your brain's going into like a million, you know, miles a minute kind of overdrive or whatever. And the amount of endorphins that are spit out, like there can be like a moment of ecstasy right before death.
Oh, sure.
And I feel like that is what this is.
You combine that with the religious and spiritual significance of everything that's going on around her. Sure. I think that's an easy call to make. So her acolytes gently guide her laying back.
Yeah. Yeah. She falls back into their arms basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we cut back to internal POV. And we really get it to see a good glimpse of the fetus as it comes into view of the camera. Blue liquid swirling all around it, and we see the eyes.
Camera's looking at it face on.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yep. The eyes open and the pupils constrict, and that baby is getting a huge dose of the water of life right now.
Yep.
So not good.
I'm pausing our go through the minute.
Okay.
I have an issue.
Okay.
So we talked about...
You have beeves?
I have beeves.
Okay.
Beeves are had. Get ready.
Pick that nit.
So, episode 3, we did a very highly scientific analysis of looking at a fetal development life cycle.
I was really hoping you would bring this up.
Oh, brother, I got you.
Okay.
We came to the conclusion, probably between 5 and 10 weeks, closer to the 10-week. This fetus that we see here, after looking at that very same highly scientific chart of fetal development, looks to be closer to the, 15-week. So, I understand. Okay. It is canon in Frank's writing that heavily spice-induced pregnancies can be accelerated, as we saw with the birth of Leto II and his twin sister Ganima.
Yeah.
Chani was not pregnant for a full 9 months.
Okay.
But I don't think it just happens instantly like that.
Probably not.
Like, that is too fast.
Yes.
However, I understand the cinematic importance of like the eye opening and tightening the pupil and like all that, but also like
the time,
instantaneous.
Yeah, the timeline's a little bit off here.
Yeah.
This is going to be a point of contention, I think, for the rest of the movie is the timeline.
Quick, I also looked up. yes. More importantly, I also looked up and I couldn't find anything on exactly how long Ganima or how long Chani was pregnant with Leto and Ganima.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find any specifics about the duration of that term of pregnancy. I'm sure Dune Navigator Martin is listening and is like, "You fucking idiot. It's there in the text."
Yeah, we may have to call on the big guns for this.
I already called him in.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about that here in a bit.
Okay. So. All right. So back to the fetus.
Yeah. Back to the fetus and the time jump inconsistencies and the beeves that I have and seemingly you have as well.
Yes, I have them, but I'm choosing to ignore them because
there are more significant time jump inconsistency and beeves to have later.
Yes, there are. So that is going to be, like I said, a theme throughout this whole movie is the time dilation, really, that we're going to experience.
The disrespect of timelines.
So from here, we cut back outside. And by outside, I mean outside the body. And Jessica gasps and she opens her eyes and we get to see her, I think for the first time with the eyes of a bad. Yeah. Did you think they were a little more purple than you expected them to be?
No, but this is the most direct like light over her.
Mm-hmm.
So all the other times that we've ever seen the eyes, there's no light source directly pointing onto the actor's face that harshly. You can actually kind of see the reflection of the like big box light and stuff in some of the shots in this scene. Just a observation.
Sure.
Not that I can't really hold that against the, you know, production team.
They looked like almost indigo to me instead of like the blue that we've kind of seen in other scenes.
Definitely a bit more vibrant.
Yeah. So the smile drops from Romola's face.
Yeah. She is now terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. So she goes from ecstasy to terror pretty quickly. And she says, well, I honestly thought we were about to have a wordless minute here. But she says, "What have we done? She's pregnant."
And now all of her acolytes are freaking out.
Yeah.
Jessica is still not fully conscious. Her eyes are open, but the light fades on this scene.
Yeah, I'm sure she's doing some Bene Gesserit shit.
And in fairness, Romalo cries out in Chicopso. For consistency.
Now, we get an interesting transition here, too. So we're about to leave the cave. We're about to go back outside.
Yep.
This is, I think, the only time this transition style happens.
The fade to black hard cut?
Well, it was like a fade to black, but not an editing fade to black where the whole thing's like fades to black. This is someone off in the corner turning down a light.
Yeah, someone's got their hand on a dial.
Exactly. It's starkly different than a editing technique fade to black where just the entire screen, you know, fades to a black screen or whatever.
Yeah, because it kind of fades from the corner down.
Yeah, well, and you can clearly tell that this is just the light source that they were using to light the scene was being just turned off. Really cool. You don't see that a lot.
We love practical effects.
Yeah.
Anywhere you can do them, whether it's with lighting or sound or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, Give me more of that shit.
It felt like a soap opera to me. They do that shit in soap operas a lot.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You see that a lot with sitcoms and sure. stuff too.
So it was really cool. I was happy to see this. It's an old school film technique, and it was really cool to see it in this.
We don't see it at all in part two or in part one.
No.
I can't think of anywhere in Blade Runner where that kind of shot. Actually, maybe in like one of the scenes with Jared Leto's character, I think we see something similar now that I'm thinking about it. Where he confronts Deckard.
Right.
In the like pond scene where there's like the reflections of the water and everything.
I'll have to go back and check. But okay, so maybe Denis has a
thing for that kind of shot.
Which is cool.
I was just trying to think. There's definitely nothing like that in Arrival.
No.
But I was just kind of like thinking back through some of Denis' other works on that shot. But,
okay. Well, I'll keep an eye out for it.
Guess I'll have to watch fucking Blade Runner again.
Oh no. So we cut back outside and the Fremen are clamoring.
They are yelling at each other.
Yeah.
But we don't see that. We just see.
We hear that.
We just see a hand on Jessica's head, presumably Paul's.
Well, I was going to say, we don't know whose it is. We don't know whose head it is. We don't know whose hand it is right now. In this very first scene,
it's holding her head in a like.
We just see hair, though. We don't know whose hair it is.
We see her face.
Not in this moment. Not in this little bit. This like half a second scene. No, man.
No, you're right. Because her face is turned to the left.
Yeah, we just see.
It's just
hand on hair.
Yeah.
But yes, it is Paul and Jessica.
Yeah. Fuck you.
So. The Fremen are clamoring. Paul is consoling his mother. Time has passed. That is the point that we need to make here. A little bit of time has passed. They have moved out from the cave to outside the mouth of the cave. And the Fremen are, you know, in two camps. You know, we get to see or we hear them. Like, it's basically young versus old.
Yeah, it's that same separation that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Where Stilgar and all of his more religious, older, you know, compatriots had their own side of the camp. And
yeah.
Chani and the gang had their whole side of everything as well. Jessica's just kind of laying in a tarp, basically.
Yeah.
And Paul's, you know, sitting. They gave her
one of those
next
space blankets. You know, the metal looking.
Generic space blanket.
Yeah. Very warm.
A very thick plastic.
I have one of those in my camping stuff, and I've had to use it a couple times. It's very nice. So the words that we get, this is all spoken in Chukopsa.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut to Chani, and she is pissed. Like in classic Chani fashion, movie Chani anyways. She's fucking pissed.
Yeah.
And she says, that was no miracle. And Stilgar, who she's arguing with, starts to respond to this. And he says, you saw it.
Well, hold on.
Okay. Are we having another minute?
I'm gonna extend some grace here because before the minute ends, the full subtitles are on the screen. We don't understand the syntax that Chukopsa is spoken in.
This is very true. Okay. So
I'm going to extend some grace and just go with the whole line. You saw it with your own eyes.
Fair enough. I'm glad you brought that up actually, because that happens a couple of times this week.
Yep.
So that
is my rule. If the full subtitle appears on the screen and it's something in Chukopsa, we just roll with it.
Fair enough. Okay. I can get behind that.
Unless you can get David Peterson on the podcast to correct us.
That'd be a good get. So yes, Stilgar responds with, you saw it with your own eyes. And that is where our minute ends.
Yep.
Whew, that was a heck of a minute, man. So let's talk about some book stuff. Because I think I have more notes about book stuff than I do about the minute of the movie.
Yep.
So where we left off, Jessica has taken the poison and she is starting to kind of go through this this hallucinogenic trip. The movie does the movie interprets this scene in a much more stressful way.
Yeah.
It is, I'm not going to call it calm in the books, but it is not as like it's action packed and like heightened stakes.
It's not Exorcist inspired.
Right. Right. So what's happening right now is Jessica is sensing the poison within her body and she's using her Bene Gesserit training to do the transmutation. So the training she's using in particular is, I originally thought it was the Prana Bindu. It's not, technically. Prana Bindu is the control over muscles and nerves.
Dune Encyclopedia would have to disagree with you.
Well, I mean, it's related to it. It's kind of just like a next step in that process.
It is a subset of Prana Bindu training?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's the internal organic chemical control, which has its own section in the Dune Wiki. And it is slightly different than the Prana Bindu, because like I said, Prana Bindu is muscles and nerves. The organic chemical control is quite literally the control over the chemical and the chemical functions in your body.
Yep.
This is how they're able to determine the sex of a baby when they're pregnant.
Sure.
So similar but different, which is a stupid phrase.
Same, but different.
Yeah.
But still same.
Now, the book gives us a pretty detailed description of what Jessica's doing right now. It describes this as her literally moving oxygen, carbon, and hydrogen molecules around, like physically moving them.
Yeah.
To form different substances in her body. And that is how she is able to create, I'm going to call it an antidote for this poison. I put antidote in air quotes here. So she forms this antidote and Chani takes some of the liquid or the moisture from her mouth, which contains the antidote.
Yep.
And puts it into the sacks of Water of Life that she's brought with her so that it can
dilute it
or render that stuff inert as well.
Yeah.
It gets referred to as a catalyst a lot, which is scientifically accurate here.
Frank had a lot of science friends.
Yeah. Yeah. So after this, Romalo goes to touch Jessica's neck and we get described a sense of connection between the two of them. The book explicitly says this is not telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a sense of oneness between Romalo and Jessica. To the point where Jessica sees Romalo, not as the old woman sitting in front of her, but as a young woman. A young girl with a dancing spirit and a tender humor. So we're starting to see into Romalo's past or see Romalo as she was in the past.
Okay.
You have a look on your face. What's up?
I was going to make a really shitty joke.
Okay. I'm going to move past it then.
Nope.
Okay.
You could say that she was a dancing queen, young and sweet, possibly only 17.
One could say that. Yep. All right, cool.
I was going to pass on it, but
I'm glad we went back
for it.
You
brought it up, so. I'm
glad we went back for it. So this young image of Romalo urges Jessica to not fight what's happening to her right now.
Yeah.
And it's at this point where the young visage of Romalo learns that Jessica is pregnant. And the same like look of horror, or the sense of horror, I guess is probably better described, is... It's the same in the books here.
Sure.
And the quote says, this changes both of you. Holy mother, what have we done? So again, very upset that Jessica did not tell them that she was pregnant. As I continue for this, it's kind of going to bleed into some other minutes that we're going to talk about here later, but I feel like this is the best place for it.
Sure.
Jessica recognizes at this point her fetus's presence, and the younger Marlo urges Jessica to try and calm down the third presence in this whole interaction. She says, or Jessica notices that the third presence, which is, you know, her baby's presence here, is terrified. Does not know what's happening. Why would she was just thrust into awareness?
Sure. Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah, right. Jessica tries the litany against fear. That does not work. So she instead focuses feelings of like comfort emotions. So love and warmth and, you know, snuggling with to protect and, you know, those kinds of like just motherly feelings. She focuses those emotions towards the fetus's presence, and that is what calms the baby down. So now that the baby's calm, we can move on to what else is happening here.
Yep.
Which is the transference of memories.
So, okay. This is something that I don't remember if I brought it up last week. So if I did, I apologize. But Jessica mentions in last week's minutes that she inherits all of the memories of all Reverend Mothers before her.
Mm-hmm.
What she explicitly does not mention is that she will also inherit all of the memories of all of the women that came before her that she's descended from.
Right.
I'm wondering if the movie is simply just doing that to simplify the transference of memory thing, or if that's an oversight.
Well, the book doesn't go into that much detail right now anyways.
Sure.
Either, I should say.
Okay. We'll give it some grace then.
It doesn't go into like the female ancestor part of that. It goes into Reverend Mother and just basic Fremen history. But it doesn't necessarily or explicitly say, hey, here's your mom, here's your grandma. You know, that kind
so
of stuff.
So on and so forth.
Yeah. The book describes what's happening to Jessica right now as being like a lecture strip in a subliminal training projector at the Bene Gesserit school. But way faster. I mean, that's a bunch of like, you know, it's not made up words, but that whole idea, that notion is made up.
That's bullshit.
So apparently they have subliminal training projectors at the Bene Gesserit school. I'm thinking like Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah.
Training.
Yeah.
And this is
just because like actually a sleeper agent.
Yeah, maybe so. So she sees all of Romalo's life in the time that it takes to blink an eye. Crazy. That's weird. Weird fast. I would kill for those download speeds.
I don't know. You recently just upgraded to having fiber. In your
I did.
House,
I did. And I feel like I'm already there. Throughout all of this, Jessica realizes that she is also like whatever's happening to her is also happening to her child inside of her. And she's like, I don't know if this kid's going to cut it. You know, this might not be good for the kid.
Really? Yeah. Huh?
So it's so weird. Like we get a little bit of a pause in the memory download right now, or I'm sure it's still happening, but Jessica, like she opens her eyes and Chani's talking to her. And basically says, hey, is this water good to drink now? I know you gave us some of your spit.
I'm really fucking thirsty. Like,
yeah, you gave us some of your spit. We put it in the containers that supposedly, you know, nullified or made the poison inert. So we good to drink? And Jessica's like, yeah, you're good. Good.
Yeah, I'm going to get back to all this other shit that I got going on that I'm dealing with. Fucking yeah. Drink your water, whatever.
So when a person drinks this, you know, safe to consume water of life,
mm-hmm.
it gives you a heightened sense of awareness for other people's emotions temporarily. So again, it is a drug. It is a party drug, basically. And naturally, what happens when you get a bunch of drugged up people together?
Orgy.
You have to do
what's the password?
You have orgy. To do an orgy. You have to do an orgy.
Yeah,
and
obviously.
That's exactly what they start doing.
Yeah.
So these Fremen take their drug water, get they high.
Get down.
Yeah, they get high and then they get down. Exactly. So I'm not going to go into the details of the orgy scene because it's not like raunchy or anything, but it's just it's super not relevant to this.
Yeah.
But just know in the background, they
while Jessica is doing her thing, everyone else is just fucking.
Yep. A lot of fucking going on.
Oh, the 60s, baby.
So after Jessica gives them the green light to have their orgy, she goes back into her trance-like state, and we get to learn a little bit about Fremen history. So she sees all the way back. So we don't just get Romalo's life. She sees the Fremen all the way back to Poratran, is the planet that it gets mentioned here.
Yeah.
Which was a very easy life for the Fremen. It made them soft. And then they were ripped from Poratran by, you know, the whims of the Emperor, and transported to Bella Tagese. Bella Tagese. And there was some visions of Seleucus Secundus. So she's seeing all this history, and she's vision in her mind, she is viewing this as a long corridor.
Yep.
With a bunch of doors and past those doors lead to specific Reverend Mother's memories. And this corridor is endless. Or it seems endless anyways. The further she travels down this corridor, she sees different ways that the Reverend Mothers they used to catalog their memories. So I love this part because we talked about whalers early.
Yep.
She sees that if you go back far enough, it was word of mouth. And the book specifically says the term sand shanties. And then it gets refined into the Rossack poison. So we get a Rossack poison mention, which is something we saw in Prophecy. And then how the Fremen further developed the Reverend Mother process with the spice on Arrakis and the Water of Life. We get a little bit about how the Water of Life is made, and I'm not going to talk about that because that is something...
That is a very important minute. Way later on.
Yes, I'm going to keep that card to myself. And yeah, so she sees all this stuff. She doesn't know how it's going to affect her baby. She's getting her, you know, lore dump on her. And then the book decides to talk about Paul and the orgy. It's kind of an abrupt cut. Paul interrupts her again. He's like, hey, mom,
hey,
is it okay if I take some of this party drug? And she's like, I don't fucking care, dude. Do it.
I've got my own shit going on.
And basically the rest of the chapter is Paul takes the drug. Him and Chani go off. It doesn't say they explicitly boned right then, but you know what's going to happen. And I think I'm going to tell people here, read this chapter in the book. It's a really good chapter. There's a lot more detail that I did not cover, even though I covered a fuck ton of this book.
For people to find it, because different prints of the book have different page numbers and everything, do you know what book? So book 1, 2, 3 within Dune.
Yes. So this is the last chapter in book 2.
All right.
I think it's 39. I think the chapter's 39. I'm not super certain on that. But I do know it is the last chapter of the book. So this is what finishes out the middle third of the book.
What a way to go.
Yeah. Okay. So that is my marathon of book notes. What did you have?
So in doing some research on the creation of Bene Gesserit Reverend Mothers, because you have like the Bene Gesserit Reverend Mothers, like Gaius, Helen, Moheim, you have, which the Dune Encyclopedia talks about naming scheme and how all of them have a Latin name, a anglicized name, and then just some kind of like spiritual name.
Yeah. We've talked about the three name pattern.
Yeah. I just think it's cool. wanted to bring it up because we talked about that way back early on in, you know, Dune Part 1.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are, you know, rogue reverend mothers like the Fremen one. But what the Dune Encyclopedia also brings up, and, you know, talked a little bit about our friend of the show, Dune Navigator Martin, I brought this question to him because the Dune Encyclopedia brings up how Bene Gesserit reverend mothers also undergo a transmutation of the water of life to turn into a reverend mother, which seems strange because the water of life seems a very explicitly Fremen thing. Jessica even goes so far in the movie as to say it's different in other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
She's not familiar with how it's done here. But she also then says that the process is lethal for men. So she must be familiar with the fact that there is some kind of poison transmutation, which confuses me because in yesterday's episode, and I specifically didn't bring it up for yesterday's minute because I wanted to talk about it here, Jessica seems confused at the fact that she has to transmute a poison to become a reverend mother in the movie. Now, I understand that Frank isn't perfect with his canon and everything. And that I also understand that the Dune Encyclopedia is essentially fan fiction that sure. has Frank's blessing. The Dune Encyclopedia talks about how the Water of Life had been used to create Reverend Mothers going so far back as to old Terran times. Mm-hmm. Now, how the fuck does that happen?
Yeah.
And this is where our good friend, Dune Navigator Martin, and I had a conversation, and I think there needs to be some room for headcanon to happen here. And he and I came to the agreement that Water of Life in this sense may be a specific term used almost too liberally for any kind of
mm-hmm.
poison transmutation.
Yeah.
And that it wouldn't be unreasonable for the Bene Gesserit going so far back as even, you know, 10,000 years before Paul Atreides, because, and as much as I hate to have to dig into Brian Cannon, we do see in Brian Cannon from Prophecy that Tula was given spice tea.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be too far to reach out and say that maybe the Bene Gesserit were importing spice for their own purposes, and they had a highly concentrated dose of spice, which we also saw in Prophecy, used to go into subconscious things and do all of that. Now, in Prophecy, we saw the Rossic poison. There's no mention of the Rossic poison, at least in what the Dune Encyclopedia has to say for the creation.
Disagree there, but okay.
I didn't see Rossic poison in the Reverend Mother entry.
There, when you look in, it's in the Zinsuni migration section there. They talk about how when the Fremen people were on the planet Rossic, it was one of the many places that they were exiled to.
Sure.
I'm getting some details wrong, but they're basically on the brink of starvation, and one of their elders found this plant that turns out to be poisonous, and they, for a brief moment, she had the past ancestral history before she died. So they found it, and that's where the Rossic poison comes from.
Okay.
They refined it after that.
So then maybe you could argue Bene Gesserit had some influence to then figure that out. All of this is to say is that doing analysis of Dune, you have to work across Frank Cannon and Dune Encyclopedia Cannon, and sometimes, unfortunately, Brian Cannon. But I think my point in all of this is that it seemed odd that Jessica was confused about the fact that she had to transmute a poison when in reality she should have known how it was done and that poison transmutation happens regardless. I feel like for all of this, in order to like maintain a sense of understanding across these different canons, we just need a big ass cork board and red string.
Okay. So there is a point right after Romalo shares all of her memories with Jessica.
Yep.
And Jessica realizes what is happening and she thinks to herself, I am now a reverend mother. So I'm just going to read from the book here. Just yep. a short passage. And she knew with a generalized awareness that she had become, in truth, precisely what was meant by a Bene Gesserit reverend mother. The poison drug had transformed her. This wasn't exactly how they did it at the Bene Gesserit school, she knew. No one had ever introduced her to the mysteries of it, but she knew. The end result was the same. So, and it's not necessarily the drug that is doing this. It is the operation that the drug performs. So it could be any number of things, but you have to go through this ordeal, this agony, if you want to call it that.
Oh, yeah. A spice agony?
A spice agony. In order to awaken that consciousness within you.
Sure. And I think that's where Martin and I had come to that agreement where, like, okay, yes, it's not exactly the water of life per se.
Yeah.
But a highly concentrated dosage of spice, which if you want to like scale dosages, right, the Bene Gesserits may have like a scale 1 to 10 of 8,
yeah,
like super high dosage, whereas the water of life is like a 50 because it is just pure concentrated, and we will understand sure. why mm-hmm. later.
I think so.
So yeah. Point is that Frank is not explicit enough sometimes, I think.
Not yet. Anyways, I think sure. this point gets fleshed out a lot more as we go along.
Yeah.
So. Whew. All right. Well, this was a beefy one, man.
It's a thick minute. What are we at on our recording time right now?
We are at 50-minute record time right now.
That's gonna get cut down a bit.
Yep.
Just from some perusing through books to find passages exactly. and everything, I'm sure. But
yeah. So, what do you say we come back and do all this again tomorrow, but a little bit shorter?
Probably a lot shorter. I think tomorrow's minute is almost exclusively entirely in Chocobso, so it's going to be pretty cut and dry, I think. Anyways, that was quite a Tuesday episode.
Happy Tuesday. Our first long one was a Tuesday episode, too.
Yeah, we talked about Cheops chess.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Sorry, that in real time, that was like a month ago. Holy shit.
All right, take us out, man.
Of course, as always, you can find us on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com there, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you like the good old-fashioned email method of getting in touch with us. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, don't forget to rate and share the show with your friends. Even if you're not listening on Apple Podcasts, share the show with your friends. If you have anyone that likes Dune at all, I'm sure we have at least some jokes. Maybe.
Do you want these friends to not be your friends anymore? Share our podcast.
Share the Dune Minute podcast with them. Are you trying to get out of a meeting with your boss? Share a minute yeah. of the, or share an episode of the Dune Minute podcast.
You'll probably be fired. Hey, no more meetings.
Everyone wins.
Maybe. All right, cool. Anyways, will see y'all tomorrow.
This is a terrible outro. Let's bye.
Bye.